everybody, and welcome to episode number 114 of the Rewatch Project.
I thought you were going to say it was episode one.
yeah, we've had a catastrophic IT failure on our anchor page, and we're having to go back to the beginning. Okay,
we're in a time loop.
We are, because if you remember, we used to do like three episodes of S.H.I.E.L.D. an episode, so we've now got to, from memory, cover. That'd be the ultimate blag, wouldn't it? Having to do that from memory. But no, this is episode number 114 of the Rewatch Project with Hannah and Mike. I am Mike, and with me as always is Hannah. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
You seem very tired.
I am very tired.
It's near the end
of
the week.
I'm always tired.
Is that because of crushing depression or drugs?
I have two young children who are full on.
And it's Thursday.
Yeah, indeed.
And Philip didn't want to brush his teeth tonight, and he just took the last
bit
of energy.
Tried to absolutely throw his sister under the bus, saying that she had upset him. Which was
lies,
absolute bullshit.
Chloe was outraged,
and when I called him out on it, he changed tack and said that his leg was really sore. Starred.
I should be like, look, Philip, it doesn't work for me, and it won't work for you. Okay.
yeah.
If I can't get away with faking ill injuries in order to get sympathy,
I felt like saying to him, "You're talking to your mother. Like, unless your leg is actually falling off."
You should have just stood up and bellowed, "You lie!" What's pointing to him? Just sending to his room. But yeah, so we are covering the 10th episode of Season 5 of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., namely the episode Past Life. Hannah, tell us a little bit about this episode, please.
Sure. It aired on the 2nd of February 2018. Mm. Synopsis says, the team has one final chance to return to their timeline, but their actions may have deadly consequences.
Mm.
It is directed by Eric Laniville and written by DJ Doyle.
Excellent. Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to this. We are almost reaching the midpoint of this season, which is incredible already. It feels like just yesterday that we started this season. So that is quite impressive. And I'd just like to remind people that now we're up to date. We would appreciate some feedback, so get some sent in. You can do that at rewatchprojectpodcast@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us through social media, namely Instagram or Twitter at rewatchproj, that's rewatch proj, or alternatively, or additionally, depending on how feedback randy you are, you can leave us comments on our YouTube channel, and also like, subscribe, shares, thumbs up, and all of that good stuff is appreciated. Please also check out our friend shows, namely Talk Without Rhythm podcast, The Good, The Bad, and The Odd, The Iron Sequel, His Film, Her Movie, Film Bastards, Entertainment Landfill, and Chin Stroker vs. Punter. And also, please do give us reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Mm.
So do we have any feedback?
Yes, indeed we do.
Okay, well, then we shall do some feedback.
Righty-ho. Okay, so this first one is on episode 111, the episode Together or Not at All.
Mm.
Jack Dubs says, I love that non-verbal moment between Sinara and Cassius, where she basically says with a look, if you don't step up and take charge, I might actually leave with your fool of a brother.
Yeah, it's funny because it's a slightly different variant on her bitch please face that actually manages to convey a great deal. That ties in nicely with all of the kind of Roman stuff, where a lot of it is, it's kind of knowing looks, you know, and subterfuge and subtlety and meaningful glances and all of that kind of stuff. But no, I like those two characters.
Yeah. On episode 112, The Last Day, Silver Surfer says,
Holy Silver Galactus. Surfer says,
double drop, sweet.
And yes, we did a drop two episodes in, I don't know, in one day.
Then he goes on to say, Mama May is such a nice scene that I didn't see coming.
Yeah, same here, and I'd forgotten about it as well, and it was one of those kind of, the episode didn't really do anything to make you feel that it was leading up to that, but it did feel completely earned as well.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. I really loved seeing that softer side of May.
Mm.
On episode 113, Best Laid Plans, Silver Surfer. I've enjoyed Lord of the Rings, but been more into Conan the Barbarian since my childhood. Did you know Conan's lore is older than Lord of the Rings?
Wow.
I was curious to know if Conan was embraced by England and New Zealand, or is it seen more as a rivalry with Tolkien's work? Always enjoy listening to you two.
I think that Conan, because that was written by Ron. Oh, good, not Ron. What's his name? I can't remember the name of the guy who wrote Conan the Barbarian. That's really embarrassing. Let me look it up. Yeah, so give me a moment. I want to say H. Rider Haggard, but that's Tarzan. Robert E. Howard. It's always seen as being pulpier. I think because Tolkien was a linguist and, you know, was an Oxbridge guy, whereas Conan, I think, was seen as being closer to L. Rider Haggard and people like that, and, you know, Rudyard Kipling. I think in the UK, because I know that for Conan, the books were very successful, but in America, he was very well known from the Marvel comic books of Conan as well. And then the film came. But I think really in the UK, at least, and I think New Zealand similar, it's really those Arnold Schwarzenegger movies.
That's what I associate Conan with.
And I think that's the case for most people. But I think that in the States, the larger literary mythology of Conan is, and the thing with Conan as well, there's so much more of it. There's a lot of books. But no, I love that mythology. I've been reading, working through the Marvel, the classic run. Is it Roy Thomas Baker? I think was the Marvel writer who did a very famous run of Conan comics in the 70s. And they're great. They're great fun, you know. And they feel more, the fantasy is much broader, like, you know, Atlantean mythology and things like that. Whereas what Tolkien was trying to do was to try and create, you know, he talks about how most of England's mythologies were stolen from other cultures, you know, or were brought in by people who invaded, you know, like a lot of King Arthur, Arthurian legend, that's not homegrown, you know. And what Tolkien wanted to do was, as well as exploring the linguistic components, he wanted to create an English mythology. And that's what that was, whereas Conan the Barbarian really was designed as an entertainment, but itself has a very rich mythology about it. And it's not one that I know a huge amount about beyond the Arnie movies and reading the comic books. And I've read the first of the Howard, you've done it again. the Howard books. So I've probably got loads of things factually wrong and all of that kind of stuff. But I think that, I just think their scene has been very different.
I have to confess, I have never seen the movies or anything.
Yeah, they're very, very entertaining.
And that doesn't mean that they weren't popular here. I think they just...
They're before your time as well, a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I was only three when the original film came out. But, you know, I never thought to go back and watch
it. I was more familiar with when Conan the Barbarian came out, and it was a really successful film. It bred a lot of knockoffs. There were a lot of Italian knockoffs and a lot of American ones as well. So I grew up more familiar with the films that came out that were influenced by it, like things like Beastmaster. And to a certain extent, things like Krull. Krull brought in more science fiction elements. But, you know, there was a good 10 years, and like Red Sonja and films like that, there was a good 10 years of films that Conan influenced. And, you know, it cast a long shadow. People forget it. Conan's one of those films and one of those franchises, a bit like the original Planet of the Apes films, where people forget how big they were. And that element has kind of been forgotten a little bit. And also, Conan, he came out in 1982, and that was a pretty crowded year, you know. But I remember even years before. And also, it was R-rated, you know, so kids couldn't go and see it. So I think Conan also had this air of transgressiveness or transgression about it, where there was a feeling of you weren't allowed to see it, or it was a bit naughty if you did, you know. But no, they're really entertaining films.
Okay. Jack Dubs on episode 112, The Last Day, says, this season has a fair few absolute stonkers, but The Last Day may well be my favourite episode. the revelation that Team S.H.I.E.L.D. has been stuck in a time loop and they are in some way responsible for the future dystopia we/they are currently stranded in blows my tiny Scottish mind. There are so many wonderful touches in this episode, stuff like in the opening flashback to 2018, you can see the rolling blackouts happening outside of the Zephyr's cockpit windows as the city below them is being quaked apart.
That is a nice touch.
There's a couple of things he mentions that I think are spoilers.
Okay.
So his just for anyone listening, his message does go on to mention a couple of other things.
Okay.
But I'm not going to read them out here. If you want to go and have a look, go and have a look at
on the YouTube channel. It's interesting though, this whole idea of the
and
sort
thank
of
you, Jack Dubs.
Of like the kind of yes, thank you, Jack. Of the kind of the head fuckiness of the science fiction element is, and this is another one of the reasons why I compared the show to Fringe, is that it goes really sci-fi, and I don't mean just because it's this season set in space or anything like that, but just the sort of the timey-wimey kind of conceptual elements of it are pretty smart, and it's one of those things where you can either just enjoy it on the surface level and go, okay, so that's happened, I get it, or you can really think about it and kind of get into that kind of head-tripping causality loop kind of, and how far you want to take that is up to you as the viewer. But yeah, there's some smart stuff going on in this season.
Okay, episode 113, Best Laid Plans. Jack Dubb says, Enoch was an absolute hoot in this episode. I find myself agreeing with Mike on this one. The scene centred around the denizens of the lighthouse was sadly the least interesting part of the story.
Yeah. I mean, it's all relative, ultimately. But it's nice to have somebody actually agree with me. and B, I just think that it's just quite a rote plot line, and it's necessary, it needs to happen.
Yeah.
But I just think that, and I think that Flint, whilst he's, you know, nothing against the actor, and you know, he's based on a character from the comic book, so if you're a comic book fan, that's a nice little touch. But I just think his character's a little one note and a little kind of unbelievable in his earnestness. I just want to help people, and it's like, I don't know. But something about that corner.
Too cynical
for of, no, it's the he just does. I'm just not convinced by the performance to a certain extent. And it's difficult. It's a difficult role, particularly for a young actor to play. So I've got nothing against, you know, the lad who plays him. But I just feel like that corner of the storyline is something that I think the writers and the producers have kind of been like, okay, well, we kind of need to do this, so let's just do it and get through it. And it helps that you've got like Yo-Yo and Mac in the middle of it, kind of making it entertaining and likeable. But I just think that, you know, Tess and Flint and, you know, the constantly complaining dad character who just seems to make life harder for himself, and a lot of the other, those, a lot of the, that grouping of characters just feel a little bit meh to me, but they don't have a huge amount of screen time. And in fairness, that's in comparison to lots of really awesome stuff that's happening. So of course it's going to feel a little bit lesser. And they're back to doing a long form story arc after being able to do these shorter ones. So, you know, a little bit of creakiness is to be expected and excused, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, episode 113, Jason says, it still amazes me how much the writers pack into a season. In any other show, Sonara would have lived until near the end of the season and been a bane to May and Daisy all the way through.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't remember too much about this season or the rest of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., really, just certain scenes. So it would be good to rewatch it with you guys. By the way, Mike, love the Inspector Clouseau explosives. Sounded like Peter Sellers saying a bim.
Yeah. Wow, that had not occurred to me. I'd forgotten about that, and when I was editing the episode, I was just like, what are you on about, Mike? The joy of editing, you get to hear all of your embarrassing flubs again.
Indeed. Okay, so we have an email from John.
Okay.
Hello again. Hello, Hannah and Mike. John from Chicago here. As per my last email, in brackets, I found you via the Gabriel Luna interview.
Oh, yes, I remember now.
I have started my Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. rewatch, but I am starting from season 3 as I rewatched the first 2 seasons relatively recently.
Okay.
But your show has given me the incentive to get moving on that again, although I have been listening to your new episodes too, so I'm a little all over the place.
Huh.
Glad Hannah is sticking with The X-Files. It's a really fun show. There are a few slightly shaky episodes after that initial 3 or so eps, so be warned, but things pick up big time after that, and I'm pretty sure you will be a full convert by the end of the first season, if not before. And even those pulpier early episodes are entertaining and watchable. We'll update you on my S.H.I.E.L.D. rewatch as I go, John.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, John. Can't wait to hear your input for how you're finding the rest of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Hell yeah.
Okay.
And I think we've watched one more X-Files since...
We have, yeah.
Since the last one, so...
Episode 5.
So yeah, we will see how Hannah goes.
Indeed. Okay. Hi there, Hannah and Mike. Erica in Spain here again. I too am enjoying the new Lord of the Rings series.
About to go... Bonjour.
I too am enjoying the new Lord of the Rings series, especially the New Zealand photography. You guys are so lucky. I was wondering if you take it for granted or if you still look around and wonder sometimes. I moved to Spain from the States and I often find myself taking it for granted, but occasionally have a moment of remembering how lucky I am.
Mm.
Really enjoying your awesome and plentiful coverage of season 5. You are going at such a clip that I am already wondering what your Sorbet episodes are going to be.
I was thinking about that the other day, actually. That's...
And she's put Twin Peaks season 3, episode 8, please. Speak soon, Erica.
Oh, that's the mental black and white episode, isn't it?
Oh, is it? Is that the one that we thought was some experimental?
No, that was the second episode. That was the 8th episode, is the one where it starts with a nuclear explosion and then there's just 5 minutes of the camera going through the explosion and like crazy shapes and all that.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
and then
you've
got all the mad stuff with the girl and that frog moth going in her mouth and the guy, the ash-covered guy walking around that town and just all that, that insanity. That's a good one, that is.
Mm. Do you take the scenery for granted here?
No. Well, sometimes it depends because... It's you can live in a beautiful place, but it's still a place that, where you get up and go to work.
Yeah,
you know. But for me, the big thing is it's not just the the beautiful kind of scenery and the rolling. Some people haven't been to New Zealand. Americans, it's quite like I guess a lot like Hawaii, but at least where we live on the sort of southern part of the North Island, but. For me, the big thing is living near the sea.
Mm.
So I grew up in the Midlands of England. So just being near the sea is a really big thing. And I don't think that's something I'll ever take for granted.
Mm.
And there are moments as well where I'll just be like, Jesus Christ, look at this place.
Yeah.
And it's funny as well because, it's the old joke about you don't see what's on your doorstep. When we watched Lord of the Rings and things like that, there's beautiful landscapes in New Zealand that I've never seen. I've flown over.
Yeah.
Well,
there's bits that I've never seen.
But there is beautiful scenery in Lord of the Rings that is really close to where we live and is kind of looks like where we live as well.
Yeah.
And there's other bits that we've seen, through the car window on the way to other places and things like that.
Mm.
No, I don't think I do take it for granted and I don't think I ever will. I think that I was old enough when I moved here that I was so... imprinted with what the world looks like based on the UK that it'll always take you by surprise, and also there's just so much of it to see.
Mm.
I mean
I probably do sometimes, but then I was born here, so
yeah,
to me it's just how the world looks. But when I moved back, when we moved out, when our daughter was just a newborn baby, I did cry as we flew the length of the country, because I could see, we were sort of low enough that I could see bits and pieces, and it's like having that familiar smell of home.
Yeah.
And just all the memories come back.
Of course,
Just seeing bits and pieces just hit me in the feels.
Well, what I will say about New Zealand that's funny is that there are a lot of places where you've got the picture postcard version of it and you think of it, and then you go there and it's not really like that, or there's just one small part of it'll be grotty, but then there'll be this one tourist packed part of it that actually looks like the postcard. New Zealand looks like New Zealand. It does deliver. It's like you might be in an urban area or a suburban cul-de-sac like we are, but you don't have to go far to see something that looks really New Zealand-y. You know?
I mean, you can see the mountain ranges from where we are that look exactly like they do on postcards.
And the other thing as well about New Zealand is it's not just the scenery, it's the smaller population. The majority of homes are one level, so there's more sky. That's a big thing, is the fact that there aren't very many big buildings. Like a few months ago I went to Auckland, the London, you know, or the LA of New Zealand, and I was kind of freaked out being surrounded by tall buildings. I always used to be. I grew up in, like, you know, the second biggest city in England.
Yeah.
Where there are skyscrapers, you know, there are big buildings. But I've got so used to kind of there not really being that many things higher than about 50 feet. And having that, you know, that really panoramic sky view, that it actually felt vaguely anxiety-inducing to be surrounded by a bit claustrophobic, And so I think that's the other thing you really notice in New Zealand. It's not just, you know, the mountains and the valleys and all that kind of stuff, but that is a big part of it. It's also just the fact that you've got these crazy looking, to European eyes, almost prefabby houses that are all kind of pretty willy-nilly. And there's loads of room and space, and, you know, I think that's the big thing that you notice. Obviously, you don't get that from Lord of the Rings, because Lord of the Rings is, you know, has that medieval kind of aesthetic going on. But I think that's a big part of New Zealand as well that people aren't quite prepared for, or at least I wasn't quite prepared for, was just there's so much room.
I think as well, in terms of, like, actual filming locations, the thing that blew your mind was the fact that these are just places you can go to for free. For the most part.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you have to pay to go to Hobbiton.
The way I always characterise it is there are no velvet ropes.
No. But even paying to go to Hobbiton, like, once you're there, you're allowed to look through whatever you want to look
at. Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's not...
There's no... You have to have a distance. Yeah, or you have to have a green wristband to get into this part, or, you know...
You go in a...
At least it wasn't when we went.
No.
Okay, so is that it for feedback for this edition?
Yes, it is.
Cool, okay. Well, we will now hit pause. We will watch Past Life, the 10th episode of Season 5 of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and then we will return to review, react to, and riff on said episode. So we will be back with you very soon.
Have you ever wondered what so-called family films will scar your kids forever?
Putting 4 and 5 year olds in front of this movie, it's like, if they didn't know what death was before this, they're going to know it after it.
They're going to know it after it, and they're going to be freaking terrified.
And they're going to be questioning you.
Yeah.
Or do you have the slight suspicion that your loved one has a cold, dead heart?
Yeah, The Dark Knight has got, like, all the orphans, and like, oh no, we're going to die. They did not build up those orphans at all. In my head, I was like, kill them.
Then look no further, the His Film Her Movie podcast is the show for you. It's the movie podcast that celebrates the contrasting cinematic tastes of its hosts. So join Jordan and Lauren every week on their unique journey through the land of the silver screen. So if you're looking for a few laughs, some fun film-related chat, then get involved. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. So we've just finished watching Past Life, the 10th episode of Season 5 of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Hannah, initial thoughts?
I was on the figurative edge of my seat, not the literal.
Hannah's on a lazy boy, so if you were on the edge of that, that would be really uncomfortable.
It would. Basically, what I'm saying is there was as much tension watching it this time around as the first time. Like, will they all be there? Will they get it working? Will, you know, and that's just a testament to how well it's shot and constructed.
Yeah, like, I mean, if, and it's funny, it's almost like, because it's a time loop episode, it's weird. You almost feel like maybe it won't turn out the same way as it did last time.
Mm.
Because, you know, yeah. It's a paradox.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, loved it. What about you?
Yeah, no, I thought it was great, really tense. And I like the fact that one of the things that I think that they established in the last season, which I've forgotten that they seem to have kind of carried over, is that when one plot line ends, it's not like a hard ending.
Mm.
You know, it's so although, you know, we're 10 episodes in and, you know, we're still in that same storyline. And I can't really remember where it goes from here. But, you know, clearly they appear to have escaped and returned to their own side of the portal or back to their own time, however you want to view it. Mm. But the storyline's continuing, but there's a change of scenery and there's a change of focus and there's a change of presumably antagonist.
Yeah.
So... You know, it's maybe not quite as dissimilar as a structure. It's weird because in previous seasons they've had, you know, the season-long arc and elements that run longer. The last season four, you know, they obviously had those mini arcs. So, in my memory, this season was just a season-long arc, which it kind of is or seems like it will be. But it feels like it's actually somewhere between the two.
Mm.
You know, and that only really became clear in my mind or memory after watching this episode.
I think they've basically taken the best bits of the shorter, like, mini-arc structure and incorporated it into one big long story. Yeah. Like, you know, just wrapping things up in a timely manner, keeping it fresh, keeping the audience guessing.
Yeah, and it's funny as well, watching this and sort of remembering, I guess, or at least sort of, you know, understanding the structure of this season more, it's making me think more about what I was talking about with the budget thing, because obviously seasons 6 and 7 are shorter.
Mm.
They're like, I think, 12 or 13 episodes. And it almost feels like the space arc and the one location thing was... a kind of, right, that'll save us money in the first half of the season, but won't be apparent. And that basically means that they can kind of, I would imagine, get to do pretty much whatever they want in the second half of the season. Mm. So, and I think that maybe when they got to season 6 and 7, which they didn't realise they were going to get, it's as though the studio, you know, the bean counters kind of went in, crunched for numbers, and were like, you know, there's still enough of an audience for this show to warrant it being... on, you know, we can still make money from this.
Yeah.
But the numbers only make sense if we spend half the amount of money that we'd normally spend. And the easiest way to do that is to make half the amount of episodes. And then you don't have to have any kind of quality loss.
Mm.
You know, so it feels as though they made the show for as long as they could without it either getting cancelled or having to compromise the production so much that it would start to show.
Yeah.
You know, but no, I was really sort of impressed and surprised, and I thought it was very restrained of them not to show them kind of on the other side of the rainbow, so to speak, at the end, because I thought, I was like, oh, so we don't see them reappear, and then the Shield logo comes up, and I thought, oh, okay, we'll get a little bumper scene of them sort of, you know, emerging, blinking into the light, but of course the bumper scene is Tess and Flint. So we have to wait.
The implication being he can rebuild the Earth.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So the we have to wait until, you know, the next episode to see what they're returning to, you know, and what's next. And I'm really happy because I can't remember. So I'll just get to enjoy this new show.
One thing I really liked about this episode is they mixed up the pairings a little bit, like Deke and Enoch and Mac and Simmons have a little bit together.
Yeah, the worst of what you're right, actually. It's always nice when they do that.
It's quite nice. It's always refreshing when you see those different combinations. Mm.
Joey and Phoebe.
Yeah.
Oh, is it Chandler and Phoebe?
Chandler and Phoebe.
Chandler and Phoebe, they never get the I always think of, that's a community. Have you seen an episode of Community?
No.
Where there is a bit where two of the characters are talking and he's like, we hardly ever get paired up. It's like a Chandler and Phoebe thing going on here, isn't it? But what, should we get into the breakdown?
Yes.
Okay, so we open up with Cassius finds Blue Balls, who I was convinced was going to come back.
I honestly thought her eyes were going to open on that table and just go...
Well, it wasn't just that. It was... that's the noise, isn't it? Somebody's done a YouTube video of a compilation of Michael Burnham in Discovery coming round and going... Which makes it's insane how many times she does that in the show. But they do it
when you woke me up that morning.
Yeah. Deep slumber. But... for a number of reasons. First of all, because he's talking about, I want to bring her back, and we know that he can bring people back from the dead.
Yeah.
But also the fact that the actress is in the episode just lying there unconscious, and I was thinking, well, would they have really bothered like paying her for another episode just to come back and kind of be a corpse? And I guess they would, you know. So that was...
I loved all that element, though, the sort of, you know, he's crazed with grief... that he's talking to his dead corpse of a girlfriend chick.
It feels a little bit like something from Rome, a little bit like obviously in Babylon 5, the Centauri are obviously based on the Roman Empire.
Yeah.
And you've got the bit where you've got the mad emperor talking to like the decapitated heads of his enemies, like he talks to them at night.
Yeah.
It feels a very similar kind of thing to that. You know, you know, like Constantine, the mad emperor. That's a trope.
Yeah.
It's a historical trope, if there is such a thing, you know. But it's a storytelling trope that came out of history. So he's not having a good day. We see that the team are sneaking around because they're getting ready for their sort of, you know, final attempt to escape. We learn that Tess heard somebody being revived. I mean, we're putting two and two together as the audience that this is the seer that Cassius was alluding to at the end of the last episode.
Yeah.
And this is where Cassius mentions that he wants Sanara brought back from the dead, which is why I was surprised that they didn't do anything with that. I almost wonder whether there was maybe a version of the script where she was, and they maybe just thought they didn't have the time to do that, so they dialed it back, but remnants of that storyline stayed in the script. That does happen a lot on TV shows. You know, cause
I think it's plausible how they kind of explained it, that the Cree physiology was far more complicated.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not an error or fault of the show, but we've talked before about how these longer seasons, that it's that kind of throwing the track in front of the train thing.
Mm.
And, you know, if... one element of the storyline changes, it's a real challenge, you know, because you... Babylon 5, again, was a great example of that because of how quickly they had to shoot that show. Anytime an actor left the show or got sick or died or, you know, had a pay dispute or whatever, that would have this huge knock-on effect on the story. Mm. And sometimes it is just you run out of time. And you're like, okay, well, what we'll have to do is let's scrap these three or four sequences that were going to be expensive or time-consuming or complicated, but they don't have time to retroactively go back and fix all of the bits of track that were leading up to that, you know? And I wonder maybe whether that was one of those. So he gives one of his cronies, Cassius does, a sort of rage drug.
He's the doctor... the Inhuman Reviver.
Yes, the Inhuman Reviver. We see Flint given the little bit of the monolith really reminds me, right down to the lines, of the Shankara stones from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they've got the sort of three red lines on the ground. And again, it's this... somebody in this production is an Indiana Jones geek. I think it's just somebody in this... grew up in the 1980s, basically.
I think that's far more likely.
And it's all just part of the But you couldn't have grown up in the 80s and not been an Indiana Jones fan. We see Rage Man attack. Deke sees Tess and they have a moment together. It's almost as though the writers, and I don't think this is the writers showing, I think this is a good thing, because they care, is that it's as though the writers suddenly realised, hang on, Deke and Tess were actually really close. She's come back from the dead, but we haven't had any scene where the Deke has acknowledged that, or they've had. So it was nice that they actually stopped to give them a moment and go, well, hang on, these characters did actually have a history. So we're kind of selling them a bit short by not having that moment.
And I love the fact that Daisy still manages to absolutely pummel the Inhuman Reviver.
Yeah. Let's just call him that, shall we?
With her powers blocked and he's on the rage drug.
Although there is a little bit of inconsistency about what will actually kill them. Like, there's bits where, like, Mac shoots Cassius with, like, a shotgun, and but she stabs the guy and he dies when he's got the rage virus on. So it's a little odd that... I suppose at least they're consistent, because they do shoot the Inhuman Reviver as well, and that doesn't do anything. So maybe it's just that, you know, only stabbing it's weapons not work enough.
You've got to get his heart.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I suppose there's that. But it's science fiction. They can just wizards did it their way out of it, can't it? So Coulson gives Tess a kind of one undead person to another pep talk about how basically she's going to sort of, you know, deal with this. So, yeah, we see that Cassius has basically gone mad. Yo-Yo finds herself, not in a philosophical New Age way.
No, finds her tortured self.
Yeah.
I thought they did a great job of showing hopeful Yo-Yo versus...
Armless, back from the dead.
The life tortured out of Yo-Yo, you know. Yeah, like the difference between them was fantastic. And full credit to, I can't remember the actor's name who plays Yo-Yo.
Natalia Cordova, yes, is it?
That sounds right.
I think. I'm terrible with people's names.
I follow her on Instagram, but I can't remember what her name is. She just does such a fantastic job of showing that difference, and it reminded me a lot of, you know, the characters in Fringe who, you know, all play
varying
versions, and it's such a skill.
Well, the experiences make the man, don't they? And the I like the way as well that the writers as well capture the complexity of the mindset that she would have, the kind of wanting to help but worrying that the helping is what actually causes it, and that kind of just
stuck in her words of what do I tell you, what do I not tell you, how do I make this different,
and remembering when she was in that position as well, and really selling the fact that they are the same person. But this isn't like, you know, 60 Star Trek where there's a transporter accident and there's two Kirks and one of them's evil and has eyeshadow on to demonstrate that
it's like when hopeful Yo-Yo says, I don't believe that, when she says something and the other one says,
oh, my own friend.
I didn't either. You know, like, she knows that she's not going to persuade her to give up hope and just believe it's all terrible.
Yeah, so there's a sort of futility to what she's doing, and it's it's kind of understandable. So she says, I thought the same when I was there, where you are. And we learn that basically she's been killed and been brought back multiple times and is stuck in a loop. And she's like, you know, you will make it back, but then it's all going to start over again. You know, the loop's going to continue. We see Enoch get discovered. He's been tasked with trying to hold the Kree off long enough to get the power source, the sort of central power core of the station going in order to generate the energy required for them to do their thing and get back home. And Deke basically heroes up and says, look, I'll do it, I'll go. And, you know, he basically, because he knows that he needs them to go and save the world, And I like the fact that when he goes, him and Daisy are still busting each other's balls.
Mm.
He's like, she's like, almost nice knowing you. And he's just like, kiss my ass. And they just like wanders off. We see Simmons coaching Flint on how to use and understand his powers in a similar way to how she was with the Inhuman that we saw back when they were all being pitched into their gladiatorial kind of combat.
Yeah.
So we get a bit more of an insight into the fact that, I guess, one of Simmons' skill is kind of learning empathy and...
And connecting to people in a way that they can...
sort of focus, almost.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, finding a way to sort of get in there and get them to understand their abilities.
Yes.
And given... I mean, you think about where she started being absolutely petrified of humans. You know, it's great.
Well, it's almost as though she, because she was used to be so underconfident, she's able to access the mindset of somebody who is perhaps likely to fail purely because of anxiety.
Yeah.
You know, and it's that whole thing, isn't it, about how, God, if I could just master my fear, I'd be able to do that thing. But that's easier said than done, you know? Yeah. We get a little glimpse, another glimpse of Framework Fitz when he piano wires the heads off. Yeah. And you can see that Simmons
looks terrified.
Yeah, she's a bit like, oh, shit. But, you know, you got to do what you got to do. Mm.
Well, it's back to that conversation that he's had with Hunter. You know, to harness that sort of...
Use it, yeah.
Part of him that has that sort of bad guy energy.
And it's kind of about controlling it. And it's funny because I was thinking, I've mentioned it earlier, but the Star Trek episode where Kirk split into two, and you learn that... And for the first half of the episode, it's really clever writing, because for the first half of the episode, you think it's evil Kirk and good Kirk.
Mm.
But what you realise as it goes on is that it's actually...
Two halves of the same person.
It is, yes. Yeah. So the good Kirk is actually really ineffectual and kind of overthinks and can't see anything through. And the, quote, evil Kirk is just all ego and, you know, sexual drive and all this kind of stuff. And basically what he realises is he's like, I need both in it's order like to be able
two
to...
Xanders.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, that's why he's like, in the Buffy episode, he's like, shoot him, Spock, he's the fake one, you know. And it seems like a really obvious thing, because we've seen this episode, that this conceit done again and again. But I remember, you know, even back in the sort of 80s when I first saw that episode, just thinking how clever that was, the idea that parts of our personality, which society tells us are negative, are really important because you can't be assertive without aggression, you know. No. And if you swing too far either direction, it can be problematic, you know.
It's like an inside out. You've got to have some sadness.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't be happy all the time.
No. You'd be a gibbering idiot. But Zombie Yo-Yo talks about Coulson's choices, whatever that means, being... actually what instigates the end of things.
Saying that she felt she was unable to affect his choices.
Yes, and that would have helped.
Mm.
Daisy says she can't go, as it's too risky. And that the sort
and,
of...
And Yo-Yo tells Yo-Yo that Coulson's dying.
Yeah, and that the choice... Well, that's the next scene,
sorry.
Where the choice... And that's where we are, that's cool. You are perfectly paced, Hannah. And it's the choice to save him that causes the end.
Mm.
Coulson ices Daisy in order to get her back. And he tells her that... this is where Yo-Yo tells her that Coulson is dying, and that basically they have to let him die. And we see some weird kind of sickly-looking, spider-webby-looking thing on Coulson's chest for a moment
Which is alluded to earlier on when Daisy's fighting the Inhuman Reviver, when he says something about having a wardrobe malfunction, but really he's covering...
Oh, yes, I hadn't made that connection. Yeah, of course.
Chest. Yeah.
Oh, good catch. So we see also that Yo-Yo has no arms, So no more yo-yoing for her, I don't think. Although maybe she... No
to the yo-yo.
Yeah, exactly. So we see Flint in space gathering rock, and I like the fact that they do yo-yo. No, they do the Iron Man point of view mask thing as well. Yeah. So there's a nice little bit of sort of MCU reference there as well, stylistically. Flint smashes the space windows with the rocks, which they need as well. So that means that a lot of the Kree guys get sucked off outer hole. Deke saves Enoch, and the gang come in and they're freeing the servants as well. Mm. Mac finds zombie Yo-Yo and Cassius, and
watches her get her throat slit.
Yep, as he takes the rage virus.
That part, I did laugh at the at Cassius's reaction to it. It's like you when you you take some medicine that's not very nice. It's all very...
Or I take a shot of vanilla vodka.
Yeah.
We see that the vessel is too damaged to power the monolith. So they're going to use Enoch as well, but it'll kill him and Deke. I can't help but notice that Gemma silences Cassius using the power. She says, silence, and he stops being able to talk.
No, he doesn't. He just can't hear anything.
He stops, he's making a noise, and she says it, and he literally stops talking.
Bullshit.
Okay. It happens again. The great ambiguity.
It's not ambiguous.
Does he? And we should mention at this point, actually, hang on, this is useful, that it'd be great if it was. We've got Stan Brooks, the director of an earlier episode of the season, coming on the show soon to discuss season 5. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be awesome if it was his episode that had that moment? Because we could be like, we could get to sell it.
So,
Is it that episode? It's going to be too complex to find out. We'll talk about it afterwards, but I'm just saying anecdotally it would be amusing if it was.
Well, he might have to put up with us having an argument.
That's all right, you know, we're grown-ups.
Are we?
No.
Are we grown-ups?
No. So, Mac... Yeah,
he does episode 4.
Oh, that's earlier, isn't it?
Yeah, Gemma's already... She's already all aired up.
Yeah, but it was whilst she was eared up that happened. So it could be that episode.
Maybe.
But anyway, so Mac axes him, so he gets to use his axe gun, which is good. He gets to shoot somebody and axe somebody with it. So good day for Max, apart from his armless bird getting a throat cut, of course.
Yeah, she's not having the best day.
No.
I had to say, you know, poor old Mac, he's...
Like, his sense of reality must be completely screwed.
I did think that when Yo-Yo runs in... after he's, you know, killed...
He's like, for fuck's sake, people I love are dead, then they're not dead, then they're dead again. He's like, what?
It's like he's never going to believe that the person in front of him is the person in front of him ever again.
Yeah. I'll be curious to see, because I can't remember, if they actually address that at some point. So Yo-Yo returns, like a yo-yo, and May tells Coulson that Daisy won't forgive him, and he's just kind of like, well, we'll see about that. And then they go through, and we get the logo, and then we get a bumper scene at the end with Tess and Flint on the ship, and she gives him a tiny Earth and says, here you go, so rebuild it. So any final thoughts, Hannah, before we wrap things up?
Just such a solid, eventful episode.
Very good.
And I can't wait to get cracking on some more.
Yeah. No, it's good, because it felt like a big episode, but it didn't feel like... a cliffhanger or the end of anything.
Yeah.
It just felt like a lot of shit happened, and I'm really curious to see where it goes.
A lot of shit happened.
Quick reminder that we appreciate feedback at rewatchprojectpodcast@gmail.com, and also please do leave us comments on YouTube if that is how you consume the podcast. You feel free to follow and reach out to us on social media as well, on Instagram and Twitter, where in both cases we are at RewatchProj, that's Rewatch PROJ, and also Apple Podcasts and Spotify reviews, and the patronage of your listenership to our friend shows as well is also appreciated. What are we talking about next time, Hannah?
The next episode is called All the Comforts of Home. Synopsis says, Coulson and his team are out to rewrite the fate of humanity, but they are unaware how the changes will affect one S.H.I.E.L.D. agent's life.
Oh, interesting.
It's directed by Kate Woods and written by Drew Greenberg.
Oh, solid. That sounds like a nice, interesting, exploring the new status quo kind of episode. So I like those ones. Okay, that's us for now, guys. We will see you soon. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.